Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Mpuga. This evening, we'll talk about the relevancy of Africa's regional blocs in ensuring political stability. And with us tonight is our guest, Dr. Abubakar Mohamed Marzouk. He's a Ghanaian journalist and lecturer at the University of Applied Management in Accra, Ghana. He's visiting Washington and he's chanced upon our studio here. Welcome to this tour of VOA, Dr. Marzouk.
Thank you.
Very much. You're welcome.
Thank you.
And also we have a regular panelist, Suleiman Mugula, who joins us from Durban, South Africa. He's an independent political analyst. He joins us from there by phone. Suleiman, welcome to the show once again.
Thank you very much for inviting me. Good evening to the gentleman, the doctor, and to our listeners.
Thank you very much. As I said, our topic tonight, we are talking about the relevance of Africa's regional blocs in ensuring political stability. Talking of political stability, let me begin with my guest here in the studio. Ghana seems to be on the right track, at least in as far as political stability is concerned.
Yes. Huh? Yes, of course. Ghana is relatively a very peaceful country, and it is a fact beyond all dispute that Ghana is now a model of peace in democracy, good governance, and development. And in the West African region, Ghana can be described as the most peaceful, the most politically stable, the most developed in terms of human rights. Mm-hmm. I mean, in terms of anything that is related to good governance and stability. So, with all due humility, Ghana, my motherland, is a leading country in terms of human rights and democracy, in terms of peaceful political environment, in terms of good governance.
Tell me about this, since we are all journalists here, tell me about this media law and there was some debate about the fairness, whether it infringed on freedom of press. What's your take on that law?
Well, I believe anything that promotes media freedom should be allowed. Mm-hmm. And I also believe that it is not just the freedom. You and I know that journalism is a powerful tool. Mm. And once it is a powerful tool, we must have another power to control it. Because any power that is not well regulated becomes destructive. Mm-hmm. So it is up to us, the journalists, to enjoy the power within the context of sanity, within the context of stability, within the context of professionalism, within the context of responsibility. Mm-hmm. And the main objective here for journalists to maintain that freedom is to prove to the whole world, beyond all reasonable doubt, that they are objective, they are responsible, they are ethical, and they are constructive in pursuit of their profession.
I see.
So it is something good. And I believe that it will not be within the whims and caprices of the government or any institution to determine to us how we can be responsible. We as professionals already have the burden to be responsible. So let us have all the freedom and let us maintain that kind of responsibility among us. Of course, we are not operating outside the regular laws. We are not operating in the vacuum. We are operating within the confines of laws governing the whole country. So we should be responsible and we must also enjoy our freedoms.
I see. Well, Suleiman, that tidbit from Ghana first. But Ghana, given what's happening elsewhere on the continent, I think would you agree with my friend here that maybe they are moving toward the right direction?
Exactly, no doubt about it. They are showing the fruits of political maturity. I think they are forging ahead. They are joining countries like South Africa, countries like Botswana, though they still have their own problems. But by and large, we have to appreciate that Ghana has had a very good road ahead. Ever since Rawlings gave power to the civilians, it has been a sustained growth. And now I think there is a good political maturity. Seen with the spillovers now, you can see the region, the spillover that the other surrounding countries are also joining in. You can see Nigeria is settling down, Cote d'Ivoire is settling down, Gambia is also joining them. So relatively speaking, apart from Togo and Cameroon, the West African region, I think, is moving towards stability and political maturity, I think. We can appreciate that fact, I think.
And you wouldn't say that of some other countries, like you mentioned Cameroon, Togo, maybe Kyrgyzstan in the west, but then the eastern part of the continent, you have chaos in South Sudan, in Burundi, DR Congo today. They had their electro materials and are burnt at the electro board, so which means they have a few days to election and then they have no materials. So that means there's no election.
Actually, the problem of East Africa is one, which the continent and the international community has failed to understand, that since 1986, when we got a change of government in Uganda, when Mr. Museveni came to power, the whole region was affected. Mr. Museveni was never a politician. It was never a political party. He was the head of a militia. He's a warlord. He just overran other warlords and took over government. He did not have a political program. Like any other warlord, they have got their particular interests, selfish interests, particular group interests. So Museveni had his own interest together with his militia. So the militia took over. Then another militia broke off from Museveni to go in Rwanda. Another militia broke off again from Museveni to go in DRC. We have another militia again going in Central African Republic. Another militia, so in Burundi. Another militia again in Southern Sudan. So ever since 1986, we have got militias governing all the East African region. So you cannot compare countries which, like now, ever since Rawlings handed over power, the guns disappeared from the Ghanaian streets. Now, when you go to East Africa since 1986, the guns are everywhere, every day. You have got leaders who have got inside uniform, and on top they put on suits. Mm-hmm. But when the uniform and the military boots are under in those suits. So the East African region is a very fragile region. Only a few countries like Kenya, like Tanzania, which have got politicians. Militias have never had the program. Those are warlords. Mm-hmm. So that is why you have all those wars, and it will remain like that until when the season is over, that area and the international community realizes that power needs to be turned away from the gunmen to real politicians, to real political parties, with the political parties which have got programs for economic development, programs for social development, not militias who are there to make money and to enrich themselves.
We must thank him for such intellectual discourse, and not that it's even intellectual, but it's factual. Mm-hmm. For example, if you look at the Ghanaian political environment, the appreciation of democratic governance and freedom has become so pronounced that even founders of political parties themselves cannot be free from criticism within their own political party. He mentioned former President John Rawlings. Mm. Today, as we are speaking, former President John Rawlings is at loggerhead with certain leading political figures in his own party, and he is also free to predict whatever will befall the political party. Recently, as we were in New York for a conference, I was monitoring the Ghanaian political situation. I could read him. He made it clear that the opposition NDC cannot win the forthcoming elections if they remain the same way. And then it was even a topical issue. He virtually said the ruling political party will win the next election. That is the extent of democracy in our country. You go to Nigeria, former President Buhari, former President Obasanjo is being hugely criticized. And he also has the right to criticize Buhari, who was once his own man. You understand that?
No,
so
that's right.
that sense of democracy is prevalent in West Africa as compared to other parts of the continent.
Suleiman, I think there's a way where good governance or democracy is sort of contagious, because now in a neighborhood like there, it becomes almost out of fashion to bring in a gunman. Yes. Don't you think so?
Yes, and when you look at East Africa, the gun started from Uganda. The group, the Kagame group, was part of the Museveni group, which took over the political government, which was in Uganda in 1986. So after they have got the guns, they used the same guns to go and overthrow Habyarimana in Rwanda. Again, the same guns combined, those ones of Rwanda and Uganda, and they went and overthrew Mobutu. The same guns are coming from Uganda. They are also very active in southern Sudan. So what is the same guns also, they are in Burundi. They also had misfortunes there, and the elected president was summarily he was also killed. So the whole region, as you are saying, that one is militarism. That one are guns. You cannot compare with the West African region, as my brother said, as the doctor said, where you have got politics being practiced, where people are exchanging ideas and they can even predict this is you are not going to take power because you don't have the best policies. Here it is just the gun which is ruling, so much that the guns even have blinded them. They have forgotten about economic and social development. Instead, they are just concentrating on amassing power and enriching themselves.
But it never was like that in the West, too. It's just improving now, because remember Ghana, there were coups. There were coups in Nigeria. It was fashionable then.
Yes.
But I think the West, Western part of Africa has outgrown that, what my friend here calls that militarism, militias. People just pick up a gun and take power, and that's it.
Yeah, it is a matter of investing in democratic citizenship. No one thought that Ghana and Nigeria, particularly, would move away from military gangsterism to constitutional dispensation.
Right.
No one thought that, especially in the early 70s to 80s. Even I think it was in the early 90s that we started a democratic dispensation. And today, the two countries have invested massively on the sense of democratic citizenship. And the average Ghanaian or Nigerian understands that the worst democratic governance is better than the best military governance. And that is exactly why they are ready to cooperate. Because without the civil society, without the populace, without a sense of democratic citizenship, democracy itself cannot materialize. So I believe that military culture can be done away with, because countries, as you have rightly mentioned, Ghana and Nigeria have experienced such periods, and today they are reference of democratic constitutionalism in West Africa. So if those Central Africa and other parts of Africa, or Eastern Africa and other part of Africa, want, the first thing they should do, they are leaders. And in fact, they must also be assisted by the international community, and of course, the African regional, other African regional blocs, to invest heavily on the sense of democratic citizenship. Let the youth understand that the best governance is by ideation and not by the gun.
I see.
Yes.
Well, let's first remind those who are just tuning in that you're listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to you live from VOA studios here in Washington. Tonight, we're talking about the relevance of African regional blocs in ensuring political stability. Our panelists are Dr. Abubakar Mohamed Marzouk, a journalist and lecturer at the University of Applied Management in Accra, Ghana, and Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst. And I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, here in Studio One. Suleiman, Baka here mentioned that they need some countries need help from some international community, but especially as our topic is concerned tonight, from regional blocs. I think the ECOWAS may have maybe more of a regional bloc that has teeth, that has helped the region.
Yeah.
What's your take?
Really, we have to appreciate really ECOWAS, especially recently the way they handled the Gambia issue.
Yes.
It was no nonsense. ECOWAS had the participation in the Cote d'Ivoire. ECOWAS has been very fundamental in Liberia. It has been very, the whole region, they have had their hands in there to the extent now that it is calm. Even in Togo, the president of Ghana has been very active in Togo. Cameroon is the only place which they haven't interfered in very much, maybe because they are afraid of the age of the leader. But at least they have been very active in the region. Maybe if you compare them to the East African region, it is a disaster. One thing to note about the East African region, number one, as a regional organization, the fact that they are all militias, they don't have the interests of the people in their mind. Imagine Nigeria had only one civil war. But after that civil war, they don't want to repeat anything like that. Look at East Africa. Which country has not been in a civil war ever since the warlords took over? Uganda went into a civil war, and it remained in the civil war for 20 years. Rwanda went into a civil war, and it had the genocide. Burundi had the civil war. Central African Republic had the civil war. DRC has been in a perpetual war up to today, as you are saying. Today they banned all the electoral material, which is a sign of an impending civil strife in the country, because they cannot continue Kabila to go continue on. There is pressure with him, and he is insisting to stay more, which means now DRC is set for another civil war. So all these countries, Burundi, Rwanda, Central African Republic, Uganda, Southern Sudan, they have been in a perpetual civil war. Because of why? Because these are warlords. They don't have time for negotiation.
Mm-hmm.
They believe in the gun. If they were politicians, they would be negotiating, they would be sitting on the table. The way you saw in South Africa, the ANC had a military win, but the bigger portion was ANC, the political win. That is why when it came to time when the whites were willing to talk, they sat down, talked, threw away the guns. You don't see any gun in the streets in South Africa. You have an election, you don't even see the smell of a gun, not even the sight of a military man. You can take months and months without seeing a military man in South Africa. But you go to all these East African countries. Secondly, all these, as doctor has said, it is possible for the situation to change, because look at the changes which are being introduced in Ethiopia. Who would have thought that people would walk on the street in Ethiopia free without being arrested? For how many years have they been under the bondage of militarism in Ethiopia? But look, hardly 2 years, but the people are free. So which means, the way doctor said, these things are possible, they can be done, countries can embrace constitutionalism and democracy, and they can settle down. So in East Africa, it's very difficult to have regional organization, because the region, the organization, the East African community, these organizations are made up of militias themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They cannot talk even within themselves when they have got disagreement.
To what extent do you think, Dr. Mao, that ECOWAS helped put the situation in West Africa to make it a bit more stable than it was before? What was the role of ECOWAS, or what is the current role of ECOWAS? Suleiman there mentions where they have intervened, mm-hmm. and actually effectively cooled things down.
Yes.
In Gambia, they put their feet down, and the situation was solved. I mean, So I think they deserve some credit.
Yes, they've done a lot, but as a human institution, of course, we do still also have problems, certain problems. I mean, yes, and I think relatively, as we have all agreed, they have done very well. I think part of their success is understanding. Basic understanding. And if the leaders themselves, you know, it starts from the leadership. If the leaders themselves appreciate the value of democratic governance, definitely they will be able to initiate programs that will translate into the understanding of the people themselves. So at the end of the day, they realize that the leaders themselves were ready to lead the people from the culture of militarism to that of constitutionalism. And today we have you and I are happy discussing that. But then it is a human institution. I'm referring to leadership. Leadership is a human institution, and every human institution cannot be free from weaknesses, especially as we are embracing a changing world, a world that is highly dynamic. In fact, the dynamism of the world now is amazing because of technology. So the other aspects of challenges could be the future. I think they should be, because all along they have been reactive. So they must be proactive. Proactive in the sense that even packets of violence in the democratic elections could be avoided. I don't think in an advanced society like America you have people killing one another during election, especially at polling stations. So let them also come out with measures that will make elections more credible, that will make elections more peaceful, that will make elections more accountable, that will make elections more transparent, so that democracy can continue to grow. Because it will be embarrassing to come to a stage where all the gains will be destroyed. And so they must do that. So my main point here is that they must move away from the state of reaction to that of proaction. They must be more proactive. And to be more proactive, you need to measure. You need to be even to be more critical in thinking, progressive thinking. Think of the future. What will happen? Not just what we have. How can we maintain it? So that you'll be able to maintain that culture of constitutionalism. It is clear, but if we go down, we still have problems. And some of the problems still are logistic. Logistics will be traceable to poverty. There's still a large scale of poverty in those countries. And I think the best democracy can be realized when the poverty level is reduced to the barest minimum. They must tackle poverty, they must tackle healthcare, they must tackle education, particularly education. Education is a fundamental benchmark of democratic success. So if the people themselves are well educated, well enlightened, and they understand the dynamics of democratic governance, they understand that democracy is the best and that democracy is an all-inclusive game. It is not a matter of one class or a few people controlling the resources. No. People should be well enlightened on the aspects of democracy, on the nature of democracy. And then agriculture should be agriculture should be flourishing. And then other critical areas of governance, education, as I have already mentioned. Those people must be tackled very well and enhanced so that those areas will be used to safeguard the culture of democracy.
I see. But Suleiman, following his thought here, that is possible because in some countries in Africa, some in the west part of the country, they have term limits. They know I'm serving my term now, I may lose, and then I'll go out and somebody else will come in. That's not true of people like Kagame or Nkurunziza in Burundi or Museveni in Uganda. Museveni yesterday said people should not expect him to transition from, he won't hand power to anybody because he's waiting for Africa to develop. This is a man who is mid-70s saying he's been in power for 30 years and he's saying he won't go away until Africa develops. So isn't it asking for too much for these people, these kind of leaders, to have it in themselves to feel for their people?
Douglas, it is absurd, it is very sad that the reality is that the many countries in Africa, especially in the East and Central, The countries are under occupation. The citizens are captives. They have been captured by a small group of gun-wielding men. They have turned themselves into managerial experts. Ever since independence, these countries have been churning out well-educated people with very good ideas, good intellectuals, with very resourceful and hardworking. One can't understand why these people, some of them just with an ordinary degree, some without even a degree, some of them without, who came to power without any track record whatsoever. A man like Kabila came maybe from the street. He was just an ordinary street refugee in Tanzania. Some of these guys, the Kagames, the Musevenis, were just ordinary people on the streets. How could they say you sit on a country for 30 years? Who told them that they are the experts? So if they have used the guns to disempower the communities, most of the citizens have been turned into captives into their own country, in their own countries. They don't have a say. There is no room for any ideas. As a result, the countries have stagnated socially, economically. When you look at this country, the only thing they know, they are good at PR. People will tell you Uganda is the first developing, but you go there, you find the capital is a slum. It's a very big slum where you cannot even move from 1 kilometer. You move 5 kilometers, you need about 5 hours to move 1 kilometer. A complete slum. You go to DRC, people are struggling, but these leaders have decided to stay in power. So when you talk about democracy, it is too much for them. They don't even understand what is going on. All they understand that they have to become rich. So I don't know what can be done in these particular regions. But I think the people are in a dilemma, the citizens, because they are no longer citizens.
Yes.
They're just captives.
Yeah.
It's as if they are colonized by the small group.
We're running out of time. In the last 30 seconds left, do you think organizations like AU can help to spread what's happening one part of the continent to the other? About 30 seconds.
Yes, I think that is the best. That is the most important objective of AU. AU should be able to maintain peace, good governance, and development in all parts of Africa. And that is why we are coming together. Remember, we are now in an era of globalization. And EU must learn from other global institutions. I think it is the responsibility of EU to translate democratic gains from Ghana or Nigeria to Burundi or Togo. It is important for them to do that.
But so far they have failed.
Yeah, so far.
Or they have not tried at all.
Well, I think you and I should suggest to them. But then let me tell that leader. In fact, it's unfortunate that he has been in power for 30 years and he still needs more. If you cannot develop the country within 30 years, then how
are you going
long?
Well, this topic, we shall return to this topic because we're out of time right now. That wraps up this edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'd like to thank our panel, Mohamed Abubakar Mazouk, a journalist and lecturer at the University of Applied Management in Accra, Ghana, and Suleiman Mugulan, independent political analyst in Durban, South Africa. Gentlemen, thanks very much for being on the show.
Thank you. The pleasure is ours.
Thank you very much. Our producer was Jackson Mufunganya, as usual, and our engineer was Mike Dubinsky. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder, in case you missed any part of this program, you can still access it by going to our main website and scrolling to Reporters Roundtable. You can also drop us a line. Our email is reporters@vuenews.com. Thanks very much for tuning in. And until next week, I'm your host, Douglas Impoga, wishing you all the best.
I spoke with Paul Evans, a professor at the School of Public Policy and Global Affairs.